Bandwidth for March has been provided by CashFly, the fastest, most reliable CDN in the business. CashFly delivers all of our content here at 5x5, and they are the best. Check them out at cashfly.com, CacheFly, and let them know that you heard about them here on 5x5.
I am recording, and I love your inputs.
I'm also recording.
Me too.
Dan's recording. Hey. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. We recorded this episode on March 3rd, 2016. This is On the Grid, episode 156. This week, we're talking about content strategy and copywriting. Here we go. Welcome to the podcast, gentlemen.
One of these times, we should just trade off, and I'll say Matt's recording, and then Matt, you can say Dan's recording, and Dan, you can say Andy's recording.
That sounds like a great idea, because that will help people mix up our voices even more.
But whatever you say, Dan. So... Actual Dan, you told us to remind you that you had something happen at jury duty or the DMV. What was it?
It was jury duty. This was the first
time. Start us off with a fun anecdote to loosen people up, you know, just get them into the vibe.
Yeah. So have you guys actually done jury duty, like not get excused?
No, I've only been excused from jury duty.
Wow.
I've never had a chance to actually do it either. My number never gets called.
Yeah. So this was the first time where I had to go in. Like, I wasn't excused. Like, we could just kind of call or go on a website for the county that I'm in.
Okay.
So I had shown up, and even before this, because I've never done this before, I knew nothing about what was going to be going on. So like dumb little details, like I didn't know what I was supposed to be wearing to jury duty.
Did you show up in a bikini?
Yes.
What have we told you?
A mankini?
You showed up in your favorite onesie. And no, both lawyers were like, can we dismiss this man, please?
I showed up in a bright yellow banana hammock. It was a little bit off-putting for everybody.
I know this is an audio medium, but thank you for giving us all a horrible visual. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's basically Borat for anybody that doesn't know what I look like.
I don't think it's so horrible, Dan. I think you have a nice body, and we shouldn't shame you for it.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I didn't. Oh, no, I'm shaming. Borat, don't worry, Dan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, there we go. Mm-hmm. So I had shown up in a dress shirt and suit pants, and also a belt. Yes, I own belts
look
now.
At that.
Yeah, I know.
Dan out in the town.
Ah, so I had shown up like that, and when I walked in, I immediately realized I screwed up because there were people in fucking shorts and sweatshirts, and just like they rolled out of bed and they came to the courthouse.
And that surprised you?
Yeah, that did.
Oh,
People aren't trying to get on a jury, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Generally.
Also, like...
Maybe the OJ jury or something. I don't think people are trying that hard.
It's funny, because I couldn't remember if it was jury duty or DMV, but both of those things are, like, the two most common things that everybody has to do, regardless of basically anything. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, the only time in anybody's lives, really, where they're just forced to interact with the people whom they happen to share geography and nothing else with. And so, yeah, it's always a very interesting moment, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So, they started to, announce names of people that would go in two different groups. And, I didn't know about this process at all, but, the whole thing was about, jury selection. So they called up, I think it was two groups, which totaled to be about like 160 people. And, each group went in. I was in the second group, and you go into the courtroom, like they, afterwards, they said, like, oh, yeah, you could totally talk about this because, like, you're not on the jury anymore. But so you go in, everybody files into the courtroom, and there is, like, the defendant, their lawyer, and then the prosecutor. Like, everybody's there. But the judge is kind of explaining the jury selection thing to you. So it's like the other three people didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, going through everything. And the way that they did it here is that everybody had to fill out like, a worksheet. Kind of like detailing personal details about themselves, you know, like where you work, general area that you live in, your hobbies, like TV shows that you watch.
TV shows? Was it a cartoon character on trial?
No. But there was a section on like basically asking what your thoughts are on police officers and like stuff in the courtroom, and also your thoughts on guns because it was a criminal case. The whole thing is that the judge... I mean, he was very blunt, and he was actually really cool, but he said, I get it. Everybody's trying to get out of this. I understand. And then he talked about details about, like, they actually estimate how long the the whole thing will go for.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, based off of the number of witnesses and the time that the lawyers think that the conversations will be in the courtroom, we're thinking that this is probably going to be about a 4-week thing.
Jesus.
Yeah, and everybody like that was potentially going to be on the jury just looks at each other going, oh shit, that's not good. And he said, don't worry, the last page on the worksheet is that you can file for a hardship, basically an excuse to get out of jury duty. And the things that were included, like medical reasons or like I have kids, nobody else is there to take care of them, like really practical stuff. And he said, but if you're really busy at work and there's a big project, sorry, that's not an excuse. So everybody got their worksheets. We all went back into the jury room and everybody was like trying to figure out what hardship they had that they could get out of it. And like I was sitting there on my phone texting people at work trying to get details of like how many days we have allotted that we can be in jury duty that they pay like full salary for.
Yep.
Because that's one of the things. So I was like frantically texting and lo and behold, they only cover like 2 weeks at work. So I put that down. They got in and they followed everybody in and there was two different groups that went back into the courtroom at like 2 o'clock. First group was really small. It was like 18 people. They went in, they were there for about 2 minutes. They came out and everybody had like a not great look on their face. Nobody was talking. They just left. And then they brought everybody else in. It was probably about like 70 people.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the judge, he just sat back in his chair, you know, for like a good 30 seconds after everybody was in and settled. He was like, nah, you guys are excused. Like everybody's hardship worked out, whatever. He said, but before that, you know, we have to do roll call to make sure that everybody in the room is actually the person that they're supposed to be. So everybody like gets their credit. But yeah, going through the whole process, it was very interesting. It was the sort of scenario that if it was just like a day trial, I would have totally been cool with that. And I actually would have been excited about going through the whole thing. But the fact that it would stretch out for 4 weeks, like I don't think any of us three would be okay with like not working for a month.
No, I actually don't know. Yeah. I can't think of a human being that I know that could deal with that well.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
You'd be fine with that?
Absolutely.
Why?
Really?
Well, for a couple of reasons. One, you can work after jury duty is over. From what I understand, when you're actually on a jury, it doesn't even last a full 8-hour workday most of the time. So it's not like you're there, you know, 24/7. So that's the first thing.
So that's great. Yeah, what I want to do is spend 8 hours and then work after that.
You don't want to do it, but 4 weeks is not that long. Yeah, it'll be fine. You'll live.
You seemed enthusiastic is the reason I asked why.
I here's the thing. And Dan, I think you have a good attitude about this. It sounds like you have a level head on your shoulders. A lot of people, it's disproportionately okay for people to try and get out of jury duty. Like that's a civic duty. Like
sure.
Like that's a thing. Exactly. That's a thing that like we all agree as civilization that you like we need to do. And if you ever are, you know, wrongly accused or even rightly accused of a crime, do you really want the jury to be all the people that weren't smart enough to figure out how to get out of it? That's probably not the best indicator of who a jury should be. So honestly, I've kind of wanted to be on a trial at some point because I think it'd be interesting to see the whole process and I'm curious about everything about that whole world. So I would be, you know, I would be engaged at least. I wouldn't be kind of there begrudgingly. Mm-hmm. 4 weeks would be hard, but I would, you know, you gotta do it.
Well, yeah, and
I mean, I admit case, I wouldn't break the law and not do it. If I had to do it, I would do it.
Well, but everyone, that's
that
thing,
sounds
right?
Like extremely difficult.
But like the room of everyone difficult. Coming up with their hardships, like that's maybe not breaking the law, but I don't know.
Yeah,
it seems like anybody that legitimately would their life would go on if they were on that jury. You should say, "I'm fine. I can do it. My life will go on."
Yeah, yeah. And it was the case itself was interesting in a way where they were starting to give some basic details about it, and I don't know how anybody else was thinking about it for the potential jury selection. But in my head, I was like, I kind of want to know more because it was like a case It was like an event that occurred back in like 2010, and the charges that were filed were for murder, attempted murder, and illegal, like basically owning a gun without a license. And like with all those details involved, it's just like everybody in the room, I was like, man, if it wasn't 4 weeks, I would kind of want to hang out because I just want to know more what's going on. Like I'm actually genuinely interested.
I have always thought if I were on a jury and it were like a big murder case or something, I'd be in the guy in the room being like, I don't know. I don't think he did it. I don't think you can convince me. Yeah. Maybe I just watched too much Making a Murderer, but I just don't understand when you watch a compelling court case and then they're like, yep, unanimously guilty. And you're like, there wasn't one person who wouldn't sway. I'd be that guy, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe more susceptible after weeks and months of trial, but.
Well, this is part of the reason I want to do it, because I think the way it works really is that, you know, the instructions you're given are so explicit that in most situations there really isn't, you know, any room for your interpretation to change the outcome. Like,
does hung jury mean? Doesn't that mean everybody doesn't agree and they throw it out?
But I think that's, you know, as you pointed out, pretty rare for that to actually happen, because, you know, basically it's like, hey, look, here's all the evidence. I had a couple friends that were on jury duty, and most of them were on cases where, like, the deal was, here's the evidence available, and you have to say beyond a reasonable doubt that this person did this thing, and everyone agreed that they thought the person probably did it, but also there was nowhere near enough evidence to say beyond a reasonable doubt. Like, there was a reasonable doubt that maybe the person didn't do it, and the way the law works is that person goes free.
Right, except that I'm saying that in the opposite situation, it seems like it goes the opposite situation, which, obviously, I only watch murder trials, so clearly I'm influenced, but... Why not just go with not guilty as opposed to guilty and then the person gets locked up for life? That seems terrifying to me. More reasonable doubt, please.
Mm. Yeah, well, I don't know how the numbers usually break down in terms of how things go regularly, but...
100% of all Making a Murder cases end that way.
I think I'd be excited for my first trial. Probably less excited for the second trial, honestly, because I will feel like I have learned a lot. But I'm also genuinely curious to... be put in a situation where I'm forced to collaborate with, again, just like everybody. Like, here, hypothetically, a jury is supposed to be like a roll of the dice of any adult that lives in your county. So the idea that you're just getting a random selection of people, I think would be incredibly like enlightening and instructive to like talk to those people and find out how they think and, you know, get a better sense of the world around you. So I'd be very interested in doing that. That'd be like a thing that I feel like you could get a lot out of if you really paid attention to it. Anyway, I'm glad you're not on a four-week jury, selfishly, Dan.
Well, yeah, I mean, me too, selfishly.
We can make a podcast about it. Podcasts about crimes are big.
That's true.
Everyone loves those.
You could just come home and report. You probably are not allowed to do that, but you could just record all the things after it, and then you put out your own serial.
The first podcast is our own serial for the trial that Dan is on, and then the second podcast is a serial for the... time that Dan was put in jail for telling all those things about that trial.
That's really good. And then we got put on that jury, and then we do a serial about that where we get put in jail for doing a serial about it. The serial, and then we hire Sarah Koenig to do that one. I think is how that goes.
Also, I genuinely feel like 4 weeks is not super. I mean, it's obviously a long trial, but I don't think it's that long.
I mean, it sounds pretty long.
4 weeks. You get so many weeks in your life. You ever seen any of those visualizations where like you can buy a poster and it's got a little cell for every day in your life, and it goes up to like, you know, average life expectancy?
I was gonna say, if you can buy a poster with every day of your life, I would love to know how long I'm gonna live. That sounds much more valuable just to count out all the boxes than tick them off.
Actually, as you're checking off the boxes, you're getting a very slow lethal dose of radiation, and so by the time you check off that last box, it's a very good predictor.
Life hack: don't check the boxes, you live forever.
Never gonna die. Should we proceed on to a topic relevant to our extremely specialized knowledge basis?
Yeah, let's talk about stuff we do know about instead of jury duty, which I don't know about.
I don't know anything about jury duty, except that I kind of want to do it because I think it would be a new experience. I mean, don't you always just want to try basically anything new?
It really depends on what it is. No, not basically. I just watched the movie Everest, for example. Not a thing I want to try. That's very new to me. Skydiving, that's new. Don't want to try it.
You don't want to try skydiving?
Nope.
Oh, I would totally go skydiving.
Oh, nope. No, I'm terrified.
I would not feel bad for myself if I died I jumping out of a plane and just like success is living. Not it for me, man. I'm living right now. I'm good.
You're not really living though till you're falling from 15,000 feet.
Yeah. You don't, it's all about contrast, Andy. You don't know living until you're moments away from dying.
I don't know. So I basically want to do everything. Like the Everest thing, it's not that I don't want to do that. It's just that I definitely don't want to do it so much that I'm willing to commit all of the time and money it would take to actually do it.
Also, I like my nose and fingers. I'm keeping them.
I'm even curious to know what that kind of frostbite feels like. I'm sure it's not good, but I'm kind of curious, you know? Mm-hmm. If you went to Iceland, would you eat some hakarl?
The shark?
The putrefied shark
I did go to Iceland. I didn't find it. I probably would try it if it were put in front of me, though.
So that's like the, to me, like foods that are notoriously gross is like the lowest tier of like, do you just care to try new experiences or not?
Because, I pretty much just do that.
Because the stakes
no
are
what.
So low. Like, yeah. what could worst case scenario, you take a bite and you puke, and that's a great story.
that'll be fun for much all anything. Involved. I will try pretty much anything, and there's only one food in the entire world that almost made me do that, and I really tried to power through, and I couldn't do it. Stomach sausage in France.
Ugh.
Oh.
That was the worst thing I've ever had.
No, thank you.
Like, it's packed full of stomachs?
Yeah.
So it's like tripe sausage?
Mm-hmm.
What stomach of what animal do you know?
I have no idea. An animal that pees a lot, it smelled like.
Oh.
I've tried kangaroo tail before. That doesn't taste like much of any. I mean,
sounds
tastes
tough.
Pretty normal.
Yeah. Anyway, I feel like that's the base level of that. We eat a weird thing is the first line of defenses. And the second, we keep going from there. I would totally climb Everest if I had the drive.
Really? Yeah.
It's not for not wanting to do it. It's just for not being willing to do it. It seems
my
like a lot of work.
My line is, like, I'll eat any food. Assuming it's not like the, assuming it won't kill you. My line is just like, how likely is it to kill you? If it's in my brain, yeah. If it's over 99%, I'm good.
Oh, you mean if your survival, you're saying if your survival chances are less than 99%.
Low. Yep. And I don't need real numbers. I just need, this is pure mat stats.
So even a 1% chance of killing you and you're like, man, I'll probably pass on that.
1%
is pretty high now I think about it.
No, I was going to say, if it's a 99% chance of killing me, I'm going to pass.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, that means, yes. That,
what if it was a 50-50,
that's suicide,
though,
basically.
According to my stats, skydiving, 99% chance of me
I
dying.
I don't think I'm going to ask for a citation on that.
I know, like, 100 people that have skydived.
You know one person that has skydived, is what you're saying.
Yeah, right.
And that person told you about all their people that they once knew that skydived and skydied.
Oh,
I've always wanted to go base jumping. That seems more interesting to me than skydiving. More dangerous, though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Squirrel suiting, totally.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm not even like an extreme sports guy. I just want the experience. I could never picture myself being like, oh, yeah, I love skydiving. I go every year for my birthday or something. I would just want to experience it like once, probably.
Yeah.
Just to know what that feels like, which is how I feel about most things. I would like to experience most things once.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still haven't done any drugs. What's wrong with me? I don't put my money where my mouth is.
Oh, yeah, we can see? Fix that. Come to San Francisco. We'll go to the Tenderloin.
Anyway, this week I wanted to ask you two gentlemen about kind of like your relationship to this fuzzy thing that some people call content strategy or information architecture or copywriting. Basically, you know, we have... I'm happy to say we have
sure. Yeah, right. No,
I'm happy
I know.
To
yeah.
say that we have clients at all different tiers in terms of size of company, in terms of amount of money for the project they're making. We do some things that are big products for big companies. We do some very small things for some small companies, and we like it that way. So we have a small client of ours we made a really simple marketing website for like 2 years ago, and it's been serving them well, and they recently got in touch and said, hey, this has been serving us really well. We still like the site a lot, but we're changing some things about our business model, and we're growing a little bit. We just had this thing happen. Now we're going to be expanding the business. So we need something that's a better representation of where the company is now headed. Are you willing to redesign the website? And we're like, sure, absolutely. So basically, this is a marketing site. So this is a product that exists, but the site is just there to get people to know about it and get them to talk to a salesperson. It's a big enterprise software thing. So there's no like creating a free account on the website and like testing it out. There's none of that. It's basically like a big advertisement to get you to talk to a salesperson.
Sure.
So it's one of those kinds of sites. And they came to us and they were like, hey, we need this new website. And in their mind, it was like, we make the website. So we make the website, meaning that they were just going to explain some things to us and we were going to do it. And we told them in this instance was, listen, we need you to write the copy. Like, I need you to write, to tell me what you want to tell people with this website. Like, it's basically an advertisement. You're saying the business is changing. We can sit here and have a meeting all day, but what I really need you to do is sit down with the team and like write down exactly what it is you want to communicate in any format. Like, write it conversationally, write it however you want, so we can have something to put on the website. And, it was a prolonged back and forth where they didn't quite understand what we were asking for, and they gave us, like, these bullet points that were written like, and we'll put a really good fact here about the company. It's like, no, no, I need you to give us the fact, not like,
sure.
We'll put a good fact here. It was back and forth. And, you know, this is the thing. I wonder how much it should be our job to do that. So I'll start the question there. Like, if you're in my situation and you have a company like this that, you know, they're all the people working at the company, like no one is in charge of the website. It's a small thing.
Yeah,
they,
sure.
So it's kind of like they just need it because they can have it. So in this situation, are you like, all right, we're going to write the copy for you. We're going to do interviews with everybody. We're going to figure out exactly what it is you need and we're going to write it for you. Or are you like, listen, just give it to us or we're not building your website. How would you kind of run that situation? And I'm sorry, Dan, this is kind of a question for Matt, but we will expand later. I promise.
Yep.
Honestly, it would depend on how deep I am into it already. If it's somebody I've been working for like many years and I totally understand it, and they said, hey, I want you to do the website, and they kind of expected me to do the copy because there's the expectation that I know about it, I'm usually pretty comfortable with that. But that's usually a rare situation. I can't think of that many clients I work with that don't understand that relationship already. Like, I feel like most of the relationship I have, pretty much everybody understands that if they're going to ask me to design something, I'm probably going to ask them to kind of fill in the copy with their knowledge. Like, they're probably the reason they have their job is because they're very involved in the company and they're very good at it. And so they can probably explain it well. Like if we're like on a product team and been working on that product for a long time, like we're kind of augmenting, you know, an in-house team, or we like are the full product team, so we understand the product very well. That's a case where I'm totally happy to write copy, but someone new, I'm definitely going to ask for it and I'll probably push for it. So it just depends on how comfortable I am with it. I also will say, I think, there are probably people who can do it better. Like, I definitely think, you know, there are skilled people who can write better copy than I can, and I'm happy to work with those people, but it's just a budget issue sometimes.
That's what I was going to say, is I feel like sometimes in the show we talk about how design is kind of a luxury, right? Like, to be able to afford to custom design and build a website or an app is, you know, a thing that very few companies can actually afford to do, and that's why there are so many services that kind of crop up like below the lowest amount you can get a custom thing for, you know, your Squarespaces of the world, your phone gaps, that kind of stuff. So that's a luxury. I feel like in some ways,
copy's a luxury.
Well, yeah, I feel like in some ways, like content strategy is like maybe the most often ignored and overlooked thing, because even in a situation where someone's willing to pay us to design the website, if I were to actually give them, this company, a proposal for like how long it would take us to come in and figure out what they want to say on the site, they would be blown away. They'd be like, no way, we can't possibly afford that. It'd be two or three times as expensive as what it is to basically take it and make it look presentable and put it online.
Well, so, I think it's also a case of everybody's got words, so to tell somebody that you're gonna charge a lot of money for words, it's just a challenge to be like, my skill is doing the thing that everybody does all the time, I just do it better. You write emails all the time, you write copy all the time, you put stuff on the internet all the time, you use words. I'm just really good with those words. You just pay more money for it. Like, I think we deal with that to a degree because everybody feels like they can draw or like pick colors or pick shapes or pick fonts or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think that has to be much more intense if you're writing copy, right?
Sure. No, I think that's probably a very pronounced part of it. Out of curiosity, so Dan, so you have like content obviously on the sites you work on. Like, people are writing blog posts or producing podcasts, and obviously they're making that stuff. But all the other language that exists on the site, or all the other, content that's not produced by authors on the site, where does that come from? Is that part of what your team is in charge of, or is there some other team that handles that?
It's a bit of a balance. It depends on the projects. But there are plenty enough times where it could be like an offshoot, kind of like a custom landing page or something like that. And it's something that obviously we're going to build and push out. So in those cases, I think more often than not, either the product team or the designers will go in and write copy and at least do a first pass. And obviously, I mean, we sit like 20 feet away from writers. So we'll, you know, throw stuff over them, see what they think, because we're not the absolute best. We can kind of get their opinion and then just kind of move from there. There are other times where... Like a good example is Giant Bomb is very specific in their language, which is very goofy and everything. Like, it's just their vernacular is very, very much refined, their voice and tone. So a lot of times, like, if we're building something custom for them, we'll just kind of go to them and say, hey, we probably need to put a blurb in here just so this thing is a little bit more obvious, a little bit more like clear. So do you guys want to take a shot at that? They typically do, and then they'll send it to us. And then if anything needs to change, maybe it's length.
Interesting. I was just thinking, though, it's really funny to me how really completely different, you know, product design, working on an app, whether it's web-based or mobile-based, that, like, you know, has a utility, does something, versus making a marketing website, because we are 100% comfortable and consider it totally within our purview to tell a client on the sort of product side what should go where, right? Like, the whole point is we're designing this thing. Okay, so if we're designing, you know, a to-do list, then here's what we feel like the structure of the site of the app should be. Here's what information should be on this screen and how things should be organized over here. Like, that is the equivalent thing of on a marketing website saying, like, here is the thing that should go here, and here is what it should say. And, you know, it's basically exactly the same challenge, except it's so, so different, because the situation with this particular client, we're going back and forth, and it was hard to communicate what we needed. And frankly, they didn't understand why we couldn't start designing the website without them giving us the content, which is a thing that some people are like, ooh, client from hell. But, like, I understand where they're coming from completely.
No, I get it, too, because, like, I mean, also, like, templates exist where you just, like, build a template with whatever it is, your copy, your tagline goes here, your logo goes here, your headline goes here. I mean, it's very much a way that designers have kind of and I've been in plenty of places where, like, designers will show mock-ups that way, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't personally like to design that way, but I've seen it happen a million times.
But it makes sense also because, you know, the websites they're looking at in this particular industry are not good websites. Take that with a grain of salt, but, you know, they're websites that have been, they're very templatized, right? So they all look pretty much the same. So they're like, yeah, we need a website, like these websites. Like, why do we have to tell you more information before you can give us a website? Because, you know, look, we just need that.
Specific websites you're talking about are hard. That is not an easy, it's one of those things, like, it might seem easy because there are so many of those in the world and they just all kind of seem boring and bland. And so therefore, like, can't be hard to do better, but, like, that's a challenge.
I think it's a relatively,
like, in
easy...
a lot of ways, I think there's, like, making a product, even though it can be more work, like, it can be a little bit easier because you're trying to get somebody to use it, whereas this is, like, it is, like, an incredibly complex ad.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And for me, I feel like it's very easy to do a bad job of that. Like, if you just want to make a bad templated website and, you know, say we need three sentences here, so just write three sentences that vaguely fit. You know, that's a way that websites get made, certainly, and I think it's a bad way to do it. But no, you're right. It's very difficult because, you know, they're like, we need a website. I'm like, we need content. And, you know, they don't really understand that without them giving me that content, I literally have no idea where to start, right? Yeah. Like, okay, so, like, what is this page going to say? Because the, like, form of it needs to match whatever message you want to get across. And sure, I could design a big headline and, you know, a list of things with little icons next to it, so, like, every other product marketing page in the whole world. Mm-hmm. But that's not really worth your time and money as much as actually sort of critically thinking about it. So it's a weird position to be in because we don't do as many marketing websites as we do product work. And, you know, product work, I feel very comfortable inserting myself into all conversations about everything because I feel like it really is very holistic. And when the goal is some action, some behavior, then you have a starting place, right? You have a little seed, like, okay, we need to figure out how to sell this. We need to figure out how to get people to input this. And you can kind of start from there. And yeah, when you're starting with a marketing site, it's like, well, we need to get people to click this button. But the clicking of that button is not the actual challenge, right? We can make the button big and pink and, you know, point arrows at it. But that's not really the challenge. The challenge is convincing them they should click the button. And that is a very complicated thing that it requires lots of specific knowledge and, yeah, so it's kind of like I've been thinking about it a lot just because I found myself in a situation where it should ostensibly be a very simple site, you know, compared to a lot of things we design, and yet I find myself kind of a little bit out of my element where I'm like, I need you to tell me what to design here, which I never say when I'm working on a product. I tell them, you know, what they should build as opposed to, you know, them tell me what to design. But I feel like in this position, I'm kind of like a junior designer waiting for an art director to come and tell me, like, all right, well, we need a big message up here. We need, you know, but that's what I need in this situation because I don't know what's going to sell anybody on this particular niche software. I have no clue.
It's making me think about the scale of, like, your relationship with the copywriter or the author. Like, there's some where you have almost no relationship and that person doesn't even exist. And then there's the other end of it where you're working really close with an author, working on a book or something. But what's interesting is even, like, this almost requires it more than, you know, I've worked on plenty of books where you work incredibly close with the author, but you could hypothetically just drop that stuff into a template and it would still be a good book, right? Like there's I love working on a book where you can kind of, you can add details that kind of emphasize the story, and you know, you make sure you design something that's totally appropriate. But like, would dropping that book into a template prevent someone from reading it? Would it be a terrible book all of a sudden? Not really, right? But
still this, functionally performs as a book, yeah.
But this like is far less about the content, right? Like, I mean, in some ways it's all about the content, but I mean, like, it's not like you're asking someone to write 300 pages of something and you have to shape it. You're asking for little bits here and there. I guess it's because, you know, I'm trying to think of what the scale is. I guess it's because, you know, it requires so much more visual because no one's going to spend the time with it. Yeah. I'm trying to think of what the scale is because, like, there's some relationships where you're working so closely with the author and yet a template might do just fine, and other relationships where you're kind of, all you want is to work closer with the author or the copywriter and you just are like squeezing it out of them.
The thing I'm wondering about is like, okay, so this particular project is kind of rocky, just, you know, trying to figure out what to do here. You know, I'm a little bit dubious about the whole thing. So the question is like, what do I change for the future to, you know, make this better? Yeah. And I think one thing I can do better next time is not just emphasize that we need content, which I did do this time, but I think I didn't make it clear to them that like it was a big job to come up with it. Like I was like, we need content for the website. Okay, cool. We'll come up with that this afternoon. I'm like, no, it's probably not going to be that quick. It's probably going to be a lot more back and forth than, you know, writing a small amount of content is actually much harder than writing a large amount of content because you need to condense all the things you want to say down to fewer words and fewer sentences. So it's like a thing where, you know, and it's very possible, it's not the case of this particular company, but it's entirely possible that a client would come to us and just nobody at the company is, you know, qualified or has the skill to do that. Right? Like we said, it's a whole career if you're a content strategist or whatever.
Sure.
So, you know, who's to think that the, you know, CEO of a small company that is the only person that is in charge of, you know, the website is going to be able to do that job. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, I will say one thing I've done, maybe you can try this, is I've not provided an estimate until I have some sort of outline of that. Like,
usually,
I can't really,
usually
like, I can't
give
you an estimate unless you give me some sort of outline of this thing, because I don't even know how to tell you what it costs, right? So, like, you can't even, you create that barrier that, like, we can't even start with talking about money until you give us some sort of breakdown of what it's going to be.
Yeah, and that's usually what happens, too. And in this situation, we kind of had a long meeting in place of that. And it would have been different if we didn't have a relationship with them already.
Yeah,
you know, we did 2 weeks of work for them 2 years ago. So, but it's funny because like for us, okay, it was such a small project. But for them, like we did their whole website. Like we were their website people. You know, yeah, like to them, it was a very meaningful relationship. And it's not to say it's not meaningful for us, but you know, in the grand scheme of our projects, it wasn't like a big commitment. So yeah, it's interesting how that relationship also kind of cuts both ways a little bit. I changed my mind, Matt.
Yeah,
I've been thinking about it, and I think that you know, coming up with those templates is actually super duper hard.
I mean, you are kind of hired to do the templates, and you were talking about how hard a job it is.
Well, here's what's hard about a template.
Tell me.
It's got to be able to hold anything.
It does have to work for everybody.
Whoa, man.
If only there were some way to get templates that look professionally designed, because they are professionally designed, regardless of your skill level, Andy.
You know who's got the hardest job in all of web design?
Template designers?
The skilled designers at Squarespace. They have to design websites. Not just do they not have the content ahead of time, which is what we're over here whining about.
They can't just email everybody who might sign up in the future and ask for content and then wait.
They don't have the content ahead of time, and also it has to fit literally any content. Name a thing, Matt.
Oh, okay. Let's say a podcast website.
Well, you could have named something more interesting, because I was going to say you could turn it into a website. You should have said, like, wombats, website. And I'd be like, you can make a wombat website.
Printer website.
Turns out you're not creative. You're just naming things in the room. You are not very creative, Matt.
So Squarespace, no coding required, intuitive and easy-to-use tools, and you get a free domain if you sign up for a year.
Maybe you want to make a website about snow. Maybe you love snow.
That is certainly something.
You could do that on Squarespace, and their templates will work, even though they never thought someone would make a website about snow, probably.
Start your free trial today at squarespace.com, and when you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code GRID to get 10% off your first purchase and show your support for On the Grid.
Maybe you're into like some weirdly specific brand of shaving cream, and you want to make a fan site for your weirdly specific brand of shaving cream.
Book site, modem site, speaker site, cabinet site, poster site.
these would all work, and that is a testament to the skill of the great designers at Squarespace.
So thank you to Squarespace for supporting 5x5 and On the Grid.
Squarespace, you should make a website about your router or your clothes iron or your window cleaner or your tape measure.
Pencil website, ink cartridge website.
It's a little bit too clear how messy my office is from the items I just read out.
Alarm clock website, jar full of change website,
broken pop filter website,
Matt's passport website.
Your passport's just out?
No, it's in a little box. Middle box that holds Matt's passport website.
Post-it notes that are scribbled on website. Ukulele website.
So, I don't know if you guys have done this before, but something I've done in the past, both for product stuff and for marketing stuff, is that I will go like into a room with whoever, I guess the stakeholders are that you need to work with, and basically just use a tall pile of post-it notes and write down chunks of information that need to be conveyed. Mm-hmm. Either it could be like specific or just kind of like a more broad aspect, and get everything written down and then start to put it all on the wall, and then just use that space to group things together that are supposed to be grouped together. Mm-hmm. And then that typically helps define like, okay, we need a whole section on this because there's a lot of content here. Maybe we need a whole page for it. Like that has always been helpful for me because it helps reduce a lot of the back and forth of what exactly we have to do for content. Mm-hmm. But also too, it gets everybody on the same baseline of understanding like what actually needs to be talked about on the site or on the landing page or whatever.
I haven't done that exactly, but I think I brought this up a little bit last week, and I'll only ever do this if I'm like very close with a client or just someone I'm working with. But just be like, hey, look, I'm just going to take a crack at what I think is the right direction. Probably going to be totally wrong, but let's just use that as a starting point. And then you're probably going to see it and be like, no, not that, not that, not that there, not that there. But sometimes with nothing in front of you, it's like, I don't know what goes there, but people can tell you what's wrong. And that can be a helpful tool. I will never do that if I don't know someone really, really well, because it can make someone think like you're doing a bad job.
Yeah.
But just doing it, just putting anything down on a piece of paper or on a, on a prototype or whatever you want to call it, can get someone pointing out like, okay, at least now that I see it, I know that doesn't go there or that this goes here.
Yeah. And what you're describing, Matt, is basically like my idea of just what the design process is, right? Like I've said a couple times that for me, design when it comes to these kind of projects is just communication. Like it's going to be hard for us to sit down and use our words to describe what this should be. So look, I made a drawing, and now is a very clear thing we can point to and say, oh, not this, more of this, et cetera, et cetera. So it's funny because I think
guess it's different just because I think the big difference is that I usually go into a process thinking I'm trying to get it right. There's some times where I'm just like, I absolutely know I'm going to be wrong, but it will be helpful to get to right.
Oh, interesting.
It is. It's just the way I'm framing it in my mind, maybe. Like, I just thought I was going to be wrong every time I go into anything, no matter how informed I am. Maybe that's actually closer to the truth.
Well, you're always shades of wrong, right? Like, it's
of course.
You never get it perfectly right, so where does that leave us?
I don't know. What are you going to do next?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, the thing is, like, I mean, so the options are, one, just be more clear about what it's going to take. Because here's the other thing. This is not happening with this client, but it's very possible to imagine a scenario where you are like, all right, you need to provide content, and the content is just no good. Like that is a thing where it's like, okay, you didn't really think about this at all, and this is not going to work. And I, even not being a content strategist or somebody, know that this is not going to work here to put six whole paragraphs on the homepage or whatever it is that you want to do. So that scenario is the thing. And so what do you do there?
Like so let's say take that scenario for a second. Can you just chop it up? And why don't you just chop it up and do what you think is right? And just see what happens. Like, just be like, six paragraphs isn't going to work. I'm just going to put one. And then they might respond with, hey, no way. That's not going to work. But at least it's
that specific
right?
scenario is better than, it's better than getting, for example, a bunch of sentences with grammatical mistakes and no sort of sense of continuity. Like, with content that you read and you don't understand what they were going for. that's the worst kind of case scenario. And there it's like, okay, well, what happens now? And the other thing you could do is you could say, okay, this is something that we may not be the best at. Perhaps a content strategist or a writer will be better at this. But those aren't available right now, or we can't afford one. So we're going to quote you the time it takes for us to do this properly, for us to actually, come in and do the thing Dan described, where we're going to come into the company, we're going to you know, talk about different things we want to communicate. We're going to organize them, and we are going to sort of impose with our experience what we think you should use to market to the outside world. But that's the thing that, like, that would just make the project, like I said, two or three times more expensive, and we just don't get projects that way. So it's like, is it the kind of thing where maybe this is a scenario where these people just can't afford what they want us to do for them, and there's this disconnect here where we're expecting them to do what is ostensibly two-thirds of the work of what they think we're doing?
Well, I mean, do you feel like it's that much effort, though? Because even in the case, like when I was talking about card sorting, that could very well be just like a half-an-hour meeting.
And yeah, but like, you don't come out of that with, here is a comprehensive plan for what's going to be written on the site and the tone it's going to be written in and, you know, what the most important things are. And I think, I really do think it's a, like, honestly, the proposal we gave them was basically for, you give us content, and we had prior to getting it agreed on roughly the scope of it, right? We knew it wasn't going to be, you know, a giant tome of stuff. It was going to be, you know, three or four pages of a marketing website, and we're going to make it look presentable, and we're going to sort of, you know, put it in some sort of fashion that emphasizes the parts you want to emphasize. That, to me, is the simple job. The hard job is really knowing what it is you want to put on those pages. And I think it takes like twice as long or three times as long, depending on the nature of the project. So I really do think it's hard. I don't think it's something that can be understated, or most people would ever understate.
Well, I mean, all you need to know is, how long did it take everybody here to put up their own website?
Yeah. Like, boom. There it is, Matt.
I still don't have a company website. Or, I mean, we have something, but we don't really have the website of our dreams yet. It's really hard to get everybody to agree on the thing. So,
yeah, something tells me the hard part is not making it look nice.
No, we've done that a million times.
That's probably very easy. I have the domain andy.man.gold, or I guess man.gold, and I haven't done nothing with it in 9 months.
I disagree with andy.man.gold. I actually wrote all the copy for I disagree with andy.man.gold. I don't know if you know. I am a content strategist.
That's a good example. Your own website, if it was easy, you should be able to do it for yourself. Designers out there that have a hard time putting together their own website, or take, you know, months and months to do it, of which I am one of them. That's a perfect visceral example of why it is so difficult.
I mean, no, there's a big difference between copywriting and content strategy. One is just trying to figure out the overall structure of the things that need to be correlated, and things that are have a likeness to them that need to be associated. And then copywriting is being able to put that in a way that, or, you know, explain things in a better way, or outline things in a better way than just kind of slapping images and random text on a website. So,
yeah, you're definitely right. I'm conflating a couple different things here. I guess the reason I'm conflating them is I don't really know exactly which one of these things these people are most in need of. Probably all of them is the answer. But yeah, the question is like, okay, what is the thing?
Honestly, it just sounds like they need just some direction. That's really it. And like, even if you're able to walk out of a meeting together and had just a general outline of things that they need to fill in descriptors for, say like everybody understands the overall structure. Like, there's a home page, there's a page about them, and then there's another page about the service itself, and like a general contact page, and having like just basic chunks that need to be on that page, then they have a much better idea of the sort of stuff that they need to be filling in, rather than, this is our company and let's kind of just talk about all the different thoughts that we have about what we could say about ourselves. So that's kind of starting from nothing, and them not as copywriters and not as content strategists, like, they don't know where to start. So as long as if they had some sort of a template or something like that, then it's just a lot easier and they could just kind of fill in all the blanks.
Well, yeah, but that's kind of what I'm getting at, though. Like,
you need someone to create the template. Like, the template's the template's not always right.
Yeah, that basically, like, you could do that, Dan. I think that's what a lot of people do. Like, let's figure out what the chunks on the homepage are. But, like, the higher level question is, like, are there chunks on the homepage? Do we have chunks at all? Or is the homepage one giant message that has nothing else more complicated to it? And there's, like, navigation to get to other sub-messages? Like, mm-hmm. To me, it feels like yes, that is the easier way to do it. And that's ultimately kind of where we're headed here, because it's been so difficult to kind of get what we really wanted initially out of this, that we're basically at this point like, all right, well, we're going to take what we have here, we're going to start designing, and we'll use that as a catalyst to like figure out more what we should be doing, because we're struggling right now. So we're kind of heading that direction, but I don't think it's the best direction. I think part of the problem is that people who are not making websites, so in this case, our clients, are kind of putting themselves too much in the position of like thinking about the website instead of just thinking about what it is your company needs to do. Like I always have a little, not a red flag, let's call it a yellow flag that goes off in my brain whenever someone comes with like a lot of examples of what they want, because it usually indicates the fact that they've been thinking a lot about the form of something and probably less about, you know, the sort of content, the crux of it. At least it's how it feels when that happens. So, I don't know. It's
also very hard to convince somebody up front and even in the process that they don't have to do all of that work. Like, we'll figure it out at the end. It's just a matter of understanding what all the bits are. Like, you don't have to come in with your homework already done, you know? A part of it is that you actually have to do that work with people that are building it. Because if you say, like, well, I like this chunk, I like that chunk on this other site, and I just like the whole feel, like the veneer of this thing, I could see from them that's a feeling of like, this is going to give them a better understanding of what they have to make. But like for us, it's just the veneer. That's it.
Actually, Andy, do you see it as a luxury to have a client that is able to do those things and like have that relationship with you? Or is that like an absolute necessity and this is an exception?
You know, we don't do enough marketing stuff for me to really say for sure. I would consider anytime a client is like really on top of things and understands where we're coming from, I consider that a great privilege. Yeah. You know, communication is, I think, just overall more difficult than most people think it is, which comes up when you try and do very practical things all with communication with other people that you think is otherwise good. You know, like basically like in consulting, you have to communicate with so many different people about so many different things that you start to get really attuned to like just how bad most communication between people is, including us and our own clients.
Well, yeah, I mean, it becomes super, super, well, the thing I've noticed is that it's just become hyper clear to me, like really, really early in a process when I think somebody might not be a good communicator, and I'm immediately like, maybe we want to check out of this process. Maybe we got to run for the door, guys.
Well, so this is actually maybe an interesting way to take this. How much do you say, okay, this person's just not going to fit and we should kind of, you know, head for the exit? And how much do you kind of blame yourself and be like, all right, my job as a consultant is to make this work. Like, they hired us to make the website, so if I need to basically be in charge of the process of making the website, and if that means wrangling people that, you know, otherwise would not be on task or be communicating poorly, that's my duty.
I think it's a scale that can tip in the wrong direction sometimes. Like I think that like there's 50% of it that I think is my duty, and I'm like, well, I really got to be on it. And if I'm doing a bad job, then I really gotta step it up. But once it starts to tip in the other direction, I'm like, I'm doing as good a job as I can, I think, and it's still not working. I do think that there are some situations where you're just not going to save them, and I am not going to torture myself and feel bad. Because, you know, the person you're working with, the client is just not gonna work with you the way you need to work. I'm getting more and more comfortable with that. Just being, you know, respectfully, maybe this doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I don't want to beat myself up on that one anymore and be like, the consultant should always be able to solve X problem. Like sometimes it's just too difficult and it's not worth the effort. That's okay.
That's a place where you have a lot healthier relationship with that than I do. I still have tons of self-doubt about that and still basically feel like...
I don't think everyone can be saved, Andy. I don't think so.
Well, I basically feel like maybe
everybody can, but I don't think it's my job to do that for everybody. I think my job is to construct a decent and healthy life.
What about for the people that paid you?
No, I'm not talking... I'm talking about before you establish a relationship. I think once you're in, and you got to do your best job. I'm saying before you sign any documents to say we're going to work together.
Yeah, it's just, you know...
Once I'm in, yeah, I'll kill myself to get it right, and then maybe I'll assess afterwards. But before I'm in?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, like, if there's big things about a certain client that says they're going to be not good to work with, then that's a thing. But I think that oftentimes things seem fine, and then like all of a sudden something you thought was a given or you thought was understood just was not understood. And frankly, this happens sometimes on our own team. Like I there's people that I have been friends with for 16 years, and you know, there's one silly example on a website we built recently. There was a admin panel, and you could upload files to it, and I was saying, and all the conversations, all the developers, like, okay, and then the user will be able to upload their files here, and that's all good, right? And they're like, yep, totally good, upload the files there. And turns out that nowhere along the lines did any of us realize that I was talking about uploading files and, like, you know, if you uploaded the wrong one, deleting it. And if you had to upload six, you could upload six. You had to upload three, you could upload three. And they were imagining that there was a preset, like a number of files, and once you uploaded them, they were up, and that was it. And I was like, that seems like not even at all acceptable. Like, that's not even close to what I was describing. And we were working on this project for like 6 months and just did not ever communicate effectively about what upload these files to this place meant. And we build websites together all the time. So if anybody should communicate together, it's us. It's just, I always feel like it's my failure if communication didn't go well, because I know that I'm the one paying attention to it. No one else does oftentimes. So if they're not paying attention to it, they can't be blamed. If it goes wrong, it's because I did not make sure things were as clear as they could have been.
Well, I can put a bow on this one.
Good. Mm. Do it.
When it goes wrong, it's your failure.
Yep.
When it goes wrong in my life, it's your failure.
So it's just Andy's failure is the title of the episode?
This has been On The Grid, episode 156. This week, I want you to check out our subreddit. Go to onthegrid.reddit.com, find the link to this episode, and leave a comment. onthegrid.reddit.com. This week, thanks to Andy for making up our ad music on the fly. Thanks as always to Girlfriends for our theme music. And most importantly, thanks to you for listening. Until next week. I feel like I cut off Dan, though. Dan was about to say something, and I cut him right off.
Well, it's gone.
God damn it. Dan, you work with copywriters every day. Uh-huh. What a luxury. What a content strategy. Yep. You don't have anything to say to us?
Oh, Matt.